Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. You know, we are always having conversations with ourselves. Most of the time, the inner voice we hear fills us with doubt and discouragement. We're often unaware that it comes straight from the writing on our wall, hidden, pre-recorded belief systems, imprinted on our subconscious minds. If we harness the power of the brain's neuroplasticity, we can successfully break free. Despite our best intentions, so many attempts to retool our lives fall short, and we wind up right back where we started, steeped in negative self-doubts and worries. That's because these patterns developed early in our lives are etched into our brains. In the book, Mind is a Map, Awareness is the compass, and emotional intelligence is the key to living mindfully from the heart. Today's special guest, personal growth expert Demetrios Spanos, along with his, not with his co-author, but he has the co-author, Christina Reeves, has perfected a profound approach to self-transformation that's founded in brain science. Demetrios co-founded the Eudaimonia Center with Christina Reeves. It's a learning center for transformational change, core healing, and personal development. He is a certified practitioner of 6 seconds EQ and certified in heart initiation. He's going to tell us what all that means when we start, and we're going to start right now. So let me introduce you. Good morning, Demetrios.
Good morning, Randy. So happy to be here today in your lovely show.
Oh, that's great. Would you prefer I call you Dimitri or Demetrios?
Yeah, Dimitri is nice and short.
Okay, great. Got it. So the book is called The Mind is the Map. How is our mind the map?
Our mind has been sort of a program for many, many years. You know, if you go back to psychology and energy psychology, you'll find out that we all have a conscious and an unconscious level. Since we are children, from the age of 7, we sort of have thoughts, and our thoughts come together, and they create impressions, ideas, memories, and knowledge of the past. So we sort of use our mind on an autopilot way. You know, we usually make decisions based on what we call a reality. We make a reality, and sometimes we don't know if that's real. I mean, it's what our mind sees based on the existing map. So in a sense, we follow a prescribed path at times, and it's good. Sometimes it's great based on our previous belief, but sometimes when our beliefs are limited, we can't really make great decisions. So we need to be aware of those thoughts. We need to be aware of our beliefs and to be to understand how the conscious and the subconscious mind works. So that's how the mind is a map. It's a map that has been formulated by past experiences, assumptions and expectations, character traits, education, childhood upbringing, self-concept, culture, preconceived notions, and all these are stored. So it's for us now to go on a discovery and find out what is reality. You know, the great Gandhi used to say, you know, our beliefs become our thoughts, and our thoughts become our words, and our words become actions, and our actions habits, and those things determine our destiny. So we really have a different reality, and what we believe, and we have put a lot in our book, is about how the writing on our walls, which is the past areas that I just mentioned, create our present reality. So that's a little description of what the map is all about.
Okay. Okay. And I absolutely agree with you. And it's something, when I work with my clients with narcissistic abuse, it's something we really have to look at, because not only are they programmed from childhood, they're programmed from if they've been in an adult relationship that has put thoughts into their head or told them they're something that they're not. And so we have to really take those thoughts apart and see what is relevant and what is not. So I am right there with you. You say as we delve into what it means to live with patterns, we need to look further than the story of our own lives unfolding. How do we live with patterns?
Okay. Each day that we go on, let's say, for instance, when we get into our car and when we drive our car, we follow a prescribed pattern. We don't really tell ourselves, listen, get behind the wheel, do this or do that. So we follow a prescribed pattern. And those patterns are really what guides our life. When we get triggered, for instance, in a day and somebody says something to us, we respond in a habitual way. We're all familiar with the fight or flight approach. Sometimes people, you'll beep your horn while you're driving, and boom, they're going to respond in a way. Some of them would be open, some of them would upset. So it's really back to those habitual patterns that we have developed over the years. And unless we are aware of this and recognize those patterns, then our patterns, we keep getting triggered by our outside experience. So the starting point is not to struggle with any pattern. We accept what it is in our mind, we sense the freedom to change, and then we can change the pattern. So we mentioned in our book something about emotional hijacking. You know, it's that unpleasant feeling of the state of the mind that we're no longer in charge of our thoughts. And although we feel sometimes misunderstood or somebody treated us unfairly, we may feel that our choices are limited. In this case, we have to understand that our mind is emotionally hijacked, and we need to ask a lot of questions. We have to go back to those beliefs. Where did they came from, and why we do what we do? It's a big question that we all need to ask ourselves every time we come up with a pattern that limits us. And again, it all ties back to what you said. The science now, the neuroscience and the neuroscience has come up with the idea that all our brain cells are linked together. And I just want to give you this thought. 1 hour spent dwelling on negative thought or a pattern can create synaptic connections. And we have almost like communities inside, and those working like a network. So if we think positively, those things go away. But if we keep thinking negatively, they can really limit our energy and create a lot of unwanted responses. And all goes back to what you said in the beginning, the inner critic. That's what really it boils down to, the writing on the wall. And we have one little fellow inside who interprets this wall. So we need to be mindful of our patterns, and we need to be bringing them into consciousness and awareness, which is a huge task, but it can be done.
And everyone has an inner critic, every single one of us. And those of us who can think positively and become aware in our lives are the ones who understand that that inner critic is not real and that we don't have to listen to it. We can make it an entirely different entity. It's speaking to us from just thoughts, experiences, and things that have been said to us that are absolutely wrong. So we don't have to listen to it. In Chapter 2, you talk about our life force energy. And what is life force energy? What do you mean when you talk about that?
Yeah, the life force energy, and it's one of our biggest and most amazing concept. It's the universal energy that gives life to all things. Our thoughts are energy. Our thoughts give rise to our emotions, which turn into motion, energy in motion. So any type of emotion, let's take love or joy, all of them have a certain frequency. So depending on how we access to our thinking and our thoughts, we have the ability to harvest higher frequency thoughts or lower frequency thoughts. So a life energy comes into our, what we call the actual vibration blueprint. We all have a blueprint, which is our body, and it comes through our breath, you know, and it comes through our acupuncture meridian. I'm sure you heard about the latest thing about energy psychology, which deals really with using your body and psychology in order to flow the energy within you. So when the flow of life energy is depleted and we're not in balance, then it leads to disease. And we're all familiar with stress that affects our body. You know, one minute of anger can sort of weaken the immune system for 4 hours. So the more we understand about the way our life force energy works, and the more we understand that these depletions and imbalances create physical and psychological factors, the more we're going to be able to become energy beings and feel whatever is coming to our body. Our cells get revitalized. Our energy, every thought creates an infinite field of consciousness. So when we are mindful of those effects, then we really become aware and we say, why do I need to be upset about this? Is there any way for me to adjust to life? Is there any way for me to change my perception and rewrite the chemistry of the body? Is there any way that I can do, instead of getting exhausted physically at the end of the day, because the pace in the system is created by an unconscious and a subconscious level, almost like a hypnotized energy. So the universal energy of life force energy, it's shows that everything and anything is entangled together. And every situation that we have, it's easy to view ourselves as an energy vibration and be able to create a resonance that results to physical energy. So it's a huge concept. I mean, it's thousands of years we're aware of life force energy, but still yet we don't take a serious action to be aware of our thoughts and see how they affect our energy and how to be more happy, be able to be more creative. We simply allowing other factors, outside factors, to deplete our energy. So that's a little description of what we feel is the life force energy.
And you said something that I don't think I've ever heard, that 1 minute of anger, or I guess stress too, can create 4 hours of a weakened immunity system. That is amazing to me, because when you think about someone who is under stress all the time, then their immunity system is going to be very compromised, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there are nine areas, you know, in our body, what the Chinese call the meridians. And we have our skin, we have our eyes, we have our lungs, we have our heart, the stomach, muscles, all these areas that get affected by stress. they create an impact on the immunity system. And all of a sudden, our emotions and behavior create a stress in our immune system. And negative thoughts that come in can change our brain waves. So it's an amazing thing that's happening within us. And yet, most time, we focus on the outside. While we can say to ourselves, look, 1 minute of laughter, just 1 minute of laughter can boost the immune system for more than 24 hours. So when you look at these two things together and you say, you know something, I'm going to start the day with a joke. You know, what I'm going to do today, when I get up this morning, I'm going to read something funny. I'm going to start my day with funny. All of a sudden, your immune system can tune itself for the day. And that's exactly what it does. You know, you start putting together the relationship between thoughts, emotions, sensations, and behaviors, and you create this amazing energy. And you don't have to stop. You can go all day long and so on and so on. You know, I tell people in my office a lot of times, I said, you know, it's not me what I'm going to say. It's not the others what's going to say that's going to cause you pain. But your pain comes from what you assign on the writing of the wall. And, you know, we have put in our workbook some amazing pictures. What is really the writing on the wall? If you can imagine a big wall, you know, loaded with graffiti. On top of the graffiti, he has negative thoughts. He has attachments. He has stories that we've been telling ourselves since we are children. And all of a sudden, imagine this little figure, almost like with a cover, a little scary figure that keeps saying to you, you can't do anything. You're upset about this. Look what they said out there. This is what's going on. What's going on? And all of a sudden, you read medical reports that are not so positive. Or you look at other things in life, economics, and so on and so on. Automatically, you dwell on that writing of the wall. And what happens is the outcome, an autopilot, a projection, a habitual pattern, a difficulty to navigate emotion. So it's huge, so huge that we understand how our reality is created within us and not allow the previous programming, which is almost like the Matrix, you know, the movie, the Matrix. You can see how we move in an unconscious level and we're missing all the great things because the programming keeps on creating negative thoughts. We're visualizing the image of thoughts. We see a lot of other things, but changing our patterns of negative thinking by putting a new routine in our life and by doing a little affirmation in the morning or a little meditation in the evening and putting a little laughter in our life can change our whole perspective. So that's a little description of the writing on the wall that I can best share with you.
That's it's so funny because somebody called me this morning and she was singing the Mr. Rogers song, It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I just cracked up. It was the funniest thing. And it felt so good. I'm like, thank you for starting my day like this.
Absolutely. You know how much great energy you picked up out of this? Your body now, your mind, which is basically 5% in our mind is conscious, the other 95% is unconscious. Your conscious mind now move automatically, got triggered to a creative mode. And all of a sudden, you now picked up more energy. That laughter opened up the levels of energy. And all of a sudden now, you're going to realize that, look, this is a great day for me. I feel great about this. And you can deal much more effectively with a lot of things out in life. It's all part of our own identity. You know, we get sometimes to say, I don't like this, and I'm afraid about this. I don't want to do that. I don't want to deal with this. And what do? Then you block a lot of the flow of the energy. But if you start with a positive statement, I love and I accept and forgive myself for whatever happened yesterday, and what is that love means to me, all of a sudden the energy levels go up and you have a better way to deal with life instead of allowing your energy to be drained because of certain things in life. And we all know there's a lot of drama out there that we're trying to avoid.
Oh, but, my gosh, yes.
But good affirmations and starting with a joke during the morning, starting with something funny, can create and do something things. The other thing, Rennie, is the ability to understand our heart. You know, I spent a lot of years in heart initiation, and I study the way the heart takes thoughts. You know, our mind thinks, our heart feels. So, and I'm not talking about the romantic heart here. I'm talking about the wisdom of the heart that does not rely on intellectual thoughts, but has an inherent capacity for movement. This is the heart, the compass in life that we talk in our book, our spiritual existence. The moment we learn how to do a simple shift in the chambers of our brave heart, then we can access courage, determination. We can move away from judgments, preconceived notions, a lot of things. So it's an amazing concept that we take for granted. Let's learn how to use our heart. Let's take a negative thought and shift it to the chambers of the heart. And then we can really tangle a lot more issues, have a lot more energy, be able to share a lot more about our life and story with others. So it is a matter of shifting the thoughts to the heart. It's a matter of good energy. It's a matter of understanding the writing on our wall. And this is all the things that we address in our book, that we need to go back and examine that writing. We need to clean the wall. We need to create a new template for patterns and get away from the automatic programming. All this leads to new energy and new levels of performance.
Mm. Excellent. You also talk about emotional intelligence. And when you say that, when you talk about emotional intelligence, what are we, you know, how does that relate to us? What are we talking about?
Thank you so much. Emotional intelligence is something that has lately taken a huge understanding. People realize in the corporate world and in the personal world that you need to understand the logistics of emotional intelligence. You know, we and I wish our schools have taken a much more different approach in emotional intelligence. Let's understand the three things that work in our mind. As I mentioned earlier, knowing our thoughts is important, feeling and understanding our emotions is important, but also it's the willingness for the best outcome. So in a sense, by having emotional intelligence, we now can direct our attention, what is important, what is not important. How can we guide our behaviors? How we can drive moral judgment better? For instance, there are cost and benefits in every decision in our life. So emotional intelligence creates a curiosity. And if we take the four areas of life, the quality of life we live, the effectiveness, our love and relationships, and well-being, all of them come up out of curiosity and improved responsiveness. So it starts by taking the modalities that we have. We all have different modalities. And what I mean by modalities, you have a level of literacy. You know your emotions. You know, if you ask the average human being how many emotions out there, they'll be able to tell you the 5, 6, 7 basics. But we have a lot more than that. We, believe it or not, we have thousands of emotions. And all these emotions are all interrelated. So we need to understand the emotional literacy. What are the emotions out there? What is anger? What is behind anger? What is fear? What is behind fear? Then we need to recognize the patterns, how these emotions create conflict. We need to apply consequential thinking. What means if I decide this, what are the costs and benefits? And then we have to know how to navigate the emotions, be optimistic, and have enough intrinsic motivation in our life. It's almost like a circle that gives you the idea of knowing yourself and making great decisions. And emotional intelligence can affect your life, can make you a better leader, can give you a lot of tools out there. So I highly recommend that people start looking at emotional intelligence, which is really a model that has developed understanding your vulnerabilities in life. Like I said, consequential thinking is huge. You know, we make decisions, but we don't really spend enough time looking at those decisions or what the outcome would be. And emotional intelligence would make you feel closer to people, would give you an idea of your strengths and weaknesses. And you have to make a decision. Do I reinforce my strength or do I reinforce my weaknesses? And how do I do that? How do I recognize those strengths and weaknesses? By going on self-discovery, by asking the right questions, by being able to tell yourself, you know, what am I saying? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? You know, there's so many beautiful feelings that we have, but then we still decide to hook up to the negative ones. So we need to be mindful, mm-hmm. and emotional intelligence is really now in our business world has become in many companies mandatory, and a lot of companies have seen huge results by implementing emotional intelligence. It's controlling your emotions, but also using your heart again, as I mentioned earlier, to be able to flow thoughts to the heart and be able to see what's in those thoughts. You know, what are my golden nuggets in life? You know, how do I put them together? How do I decide what's better for me? Not go the flow, but decide what is really my own way of searching for happiness and figuring out ways to improve my life. So it's huge. Emotional intelligence is something that we also look at, like I said, be able to implement a lot of these things that have developed over the last 20 years in our schools, because it would clean up our walls and it would make us create more proactive behaviors. It would let us know the reasons for a lack of motivation and enthusiasm. You know, it's all right there. It's all part of our understanding. It's all part of our biochemistry. It's all part of labeling our emotions. It's a lot of things, amazing things that come in under the topic of emotional intelligence.
And, you know, and you say teaching it in school. There are so many tools, mental health tools, that kids can learn in school that would really, really alter the course of our life, their lives, and the world. I mean, it would change so much, and I don't know why they don't focus on that. But I have to agree with you. It really should start in childhood. And since they don't teach it in school, we have to teach it to our children.
Exactly. Excellent point. We have to do it ourselves, and we have to be able to understand that we are. Sometimes we are our worst enemy. We are fighting with our own programming. We're following this autopilot, and we need to be able to say, you know what? I'm no longer going to follow this prescribed path. I'm not saying it's not a good path. A lot of people are very happy with their life. A lot of people have gotten good things on their walls, their previous life. Their strategies is great. But there's always the question is, why am I doing what am I doing? You know, where did I learn this? Can I examine my beliefs? And we need to do it to create a better world and a better society.
Right. You know, I have two children. They're adults now. But when they were children, you know, I find that a lot of parents just talk out of, they just react. They just react to whatever. They don't really think, they just react. And I always made a point of thinking about what I'm saying and how I'm saying it every time I talk to my children, because I know as the child of a very toxic environment and two very toxic parents, I know what that reactionary anger and all the things that they say, how it implants and embeds in your brain. So we have to be very careful with what we tell our children and how we react to our children, because they're going to carry those things into adulthood and then have to wrestle
exactly.
with exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Christine talks about, you know, in Chapter 6, the chapter's called The Mind is Not Free to Be Happy. And I really like what she says here, because she's like, you know, some people are on this happiness quest, and they reject the feeling because of it, and they blame themselves if they're not feeling elated all the time, that they should be blissfully happy. So this is kind of a trap. What
exactly.
should we hope for? What is the best scenario for us?
Thank you so much. And I just want to say something of what you said before about the way you talk to the children. I just wanted to just add this little thing, and please forgive me for taking the extra time. But I tell you, I congratulate you for using and understanding the tonality you talk to your children. And, you know, we usually give our children a little piggy bank sometimes, and we put money to save and so on and so on. I remember I had a little piggy bank, and I couldn't wait to break it in and get all the cash out. But imagine, every time you talk nicely to the children, every time you give the right tonality and you use the right way, and you sort of project the correct vibration, you make deposit to what I call the emotional bank and what we call the bank of deposits. And those deposits are so valuable for the children because, simply enough, that becomes almost like a bank account where you make deposits and withdrawals. When you yell and scream and you create negative statements, in a sense, you make withdrawals. But when you make those little deposits every day with the softness, the kindness in your voice, then pretty much these are the reserves that those children would carry, and they'll pay 10 times more than actually cash. So congratulations for
you're
really
welcome. My daughter's 34. My son is just about to turn 28. And they carried no childhood baggage. Whatever baggage they have at this point is whatever they've accumulated on their own, and it's very little, but they thank me all the time for that because, you know, they see that this is very unusual, you know, that I just wanted my kids to hit the ground running when they turn to adults, just to hit the ground running and go upwards the whole way and not have to go backwards like I did because I struggled for so many years to undo what was done to me.
Thank you so
happiness.
Much. Happiness, exactly. Okay, let's understand happiness, okay? There are many ways to understand happiness and thousands of writing, but let's understand the difference between surface happiness, okay? You got material objects out there, okay, and you have people around you, and you have a lot of fleeting experiences, okay? So in a sense, it can be a happiness on the surface. You have... You participate in life, you welcome life, you understand emotions, you understand a lot of things. But let's understand the true meaning of happiness, the way we understand it. And I'm going to use the word eudaimonia. Eudaimonia comes from two words, EU, which is the Greek word for God, you know, praying to God, and demon. Demon in ancient Greece had nothing to do with the demons in the Bible, it had to do with the angel. In a sense, it was an angel. So eudaimonia is the ultimate happiness and fulfillment in life. It's almost like a graceful and marvelous life, okay? So we all have gifts and we all understand happiness in one way. The idea is how do you bring eudaimonia then and happiness? First, we said you have to understand what really is happening out there, your parents, the way love works, everything else. But let's also understand how basically we take happiness. Let me give you an example from my own life. When I was in Greece many years ago, I always felt that there was a little angel of happiness that was following me everywhere. And when I became a teenager, I started searching for happiness and beauty on the outside world. I wanted to have a lot of beautiful things in my life. I wanted to have a car, automobile, expensive boat, houses, and everything else. And then I started attaching my happiness to the outside sources. I said, I want wealth and I want power. And I kept making that the next moment would give me more and more and more and more. So that was the surface happiness, having happiness associated with money, with belongings, with outside things and everything else. And one day I realized that, you know what, am I grateful enough for what I have? Am I appreciative of the present moment, the way I come out and I breathe and I live my life and everything else? And I said, did I have enough and that I have to be an adult and I have to follow a social model and have be more efficient and more productive, get bigger and grandiose and elaborate things in life? So I start detaching the outside happiness from the inner happiness, which is completely free from wealth, power on any materialistic goods. Happiness depends on you. Knowing that money cannot buy you nothing. Not often, even if you have the whole earth on your own, can never happen. So you connect back to your angel of happiness, and now you start living your life within, living at the present moment, which is a big thing in our life. We forget that, you know, we are present being humans. We need to think about the past and the future. And now the moment becomes the present. What is it right now at hand? What are we doing? We are talking to each other through this beautiful radio station, talking about this concept. My mind and my heart has to focus in the present moment. There is nothing in the past, nothing in the future. And that's happiness. It's the ultimate purpose of staying at the present moment. It's the ability to move away from the outside attachments and stay within. And that, again, involves the inner programming, which basically keeps you attached to those limited beliefs that you got to do more, you got to go with the flow, and so on. So it's really a true search for happiness, and it has to be developed through positive feelings and what you feel inside of your heart, nothing on the outside.
Right. So can we expect to feel elated all the time? Is that really, I guess if you're Gandhi or Buddha or something like that, who has absolutely no material attachment,
okay,
they're just happy
okay
all the time, you know. But the average person is not Gandhi or Buddha. So,
yeah.
So, you know, do we have to feel happy all the time?
No, we don't have to feel happy, but we can change, substitute the negative thoughts with a positive thought. That's what I mean. And what I mean is this. We know that a negative thought is going to deplete our energy, okay? When we think in negative about something, and I'm not saying that there are not moments in our life when we have to be protective of what we do and so on and so on. But let's look at it from the energy point of view. Do we want the best energy to deal with the situation, or do we want limited energy? Our body, our cells, everything works with energy. So if we have a negative thought and we think negative, we start depleting our energy. I mentioned earlier that 1 minute of anger can weaken our immune system for 4 hours. So do we really want to stick to that negative thought and create a community of negative thoughts within us that would deplete our ability to find the solution, or do we want to substitute it with a positive thought? So the idea is that thoughts need to be substituted. You know, if we're going to come together as a community, if we're going to come together as a new evolution of our life, we have to think that any thought that we think is not inside of us, it's outside of us. And those thoughts connect to the universal energy. And do we want a universe that thinks negative and creates all kinds of hardships in our life, or we want to be a humanity that thinks positive? So the idea of happiness is the thoughts. What kind of thoughts come in our daily mind? How do we think of those thoughts? You know, if you think of the thought as being positive and negative, in that term, then you can make a decision. And I'm not saying you go out there and you start laughing every moment and you start saying, but it's good to have a journal and put down your own thoughts. What is it for you to be in touch with your happiness? Are you feeling happy? If you're not feeling happy, why? Tell me why. Why not? What is it exactly that's causing it? Is it the outside actions? Is it because somebody who is writing on their wall and somebody who's following a prescribed path and somebody who projects their negative thoughts on me, a narcissist like you said, or somebody else? What is it? Is it them that caused the anger, or is it me, how I'm thinking about this? Nobody out there can cause anger to me. I make my own decisions if I'm going to get angry or not. Nobody's in my head. So in a sense, what I have to do is I have to identify the outside thing and say, wait a minute, this is the outside, okay? It's not me. My body is my body. My thoughts are my thoughts. I decide if I'm going to be affected by this level or not level, because nobody can come into my thoughts. So happiness is really understanding your thoughts, understanding your state of mind, understanding completely what's happening within you, and substituting the negative with the positive.
Very good. I like that. That's a great explanation. Thank you. Yeah, I had a thought, you know, as you were talking, and I remember when our president took over, and so many people were up in arms about it. Actually, even before that, and they were protesting and they were angry and they were, you know, they were starting all these movements and everything like that, and totally obsessed, totally obsessed. You know, and I said to someone, that's not going to make the changes. That's going to make it worse.
Mm.
What you need to do is be peaceful and have everybody put good energy out there. Good energy changes negative energy, you know. Not all this anger and fighting and movements and all these kind of things. That is only going to make things worse. So that was just a thought, you know, that I had. And if we can live peacefully and quiet and we can contribute good energy to the universe, then everything gets affected, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You said it so beautifully. Peacefulness and understanding love and fear. These are the two opposites in life that we're trying to understand. Love, from love flows happiness, peace. And joy. But for fears come anger, hate, and anxiety and guilt, all these amazing destructive things in our body. And if we go back, we see we are born with love, you know. We came into this life with a lot of love. But fear is something we learn. So do we want to really connect to fear because somebody went out there and did something? Do we want to have our energy depleted, closed down? Do we want to have our body wrapped up in a cloth that prevents love from coming in and shut down to fear because of attacks or whatever it is? It's the best gift we can give. Remain peaceful. Stay open. Keep our energy levels high, and we will find every solution. We will allow ourselves to be human beings and spiritual beings, not just simply react to everybody and deal. And besides, everything is energy. Every thought that we have is energy. And the unconscious mind is like the Goliath. Every time we think negative and fearful, this gets multiplied and a depletion of energy comes in. So you don't want to be exhausted physically and spiritual because somebody said something out there. You want to be
able to
stand open and peaceful and become a good spiritual warrior so you can defend that in the best possible way. An eye for an eye makes the world go blind. So that's what I always believe.
That's true. You're absolutely right. I like that. So we're almost running out of time. So we're talking about your book, The Mind is the Map, and your website is themindisthemap.com. And you said you mentioned something about a workbook. I don't have a workbook with
me.
We
have
a workbook. You do have a companion. Is that a companion to this workbook?
Yes. It's a companion to this workbook. It's an easy way with exercises that really gives you questions. We don't try to give people, everybody has a different map in their minds, but we try to come up with questions, you know, how you describe your experiences, what are you doing, how do you get triggered, what are the emotions, simple questions. We also open up lately, because we have a lot of followers, we open up evdemoniacenter.com, which is a beautiful site that has a lot of nice quizzes that basically tell you where you are in life and where you're going to be. And we also have a lot of courses that are very inexpensive, and we customize those courses for you. In other words, we understand through a variety of quizzes where you are in life, where you're going to go. And as soon as we know a little bit more about you, we can recommend a course. You don't have to take it, but we would say this course would improve this or this course would improve that. It's a beautiful way of understanding the map of the mind and basically realize what can I do the easiest and the fastest way. Sometimes it takes 15 minutes to get rid of the programming, 15 minutes to create emotional mastery on going in the present moment or deal with your inner voice or your negative thoughts or hooked up to life force energy. So we have a variety of quizzes and so on. We come up personalizing it.
And we can access all that information through themindisthemap.com?
Yes, you can go to the Mind is the Map, or you can go to themoniacenter.com, which is connected. If you go to the Mind the Map, you'll click and it'll take you to the Monia Center, which is really our learning area of life with the courses, the offering, and everything else, and the customizing courses.
Perfect.
Like
I don't want us to get cut off. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Anyway, thank you so much for being my guest. This was a really great discussion.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and you really opened our eyes and opened our minds. So thank you very much.
Bless you, I appreciate you being my guest. Bless your listeners and bless you. Thank you for having me, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dimitri. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We are out of time today. You can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com or go to my website, loveyourlife@randyfine.com. Yeah, that's about it. That's what I have for you today. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.